fighting for this title. And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everyone, welcome to another episode of The Warm Down today, joined by Liverpool legend in Howie Gayle. Howie, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on, yeah.
Before we get into what we're going to talk about with Howie, this is sponsored by The Athletic, as all the Warm Downs have been lately. And if you would like to get a free month's trial and 50% off your yearly subscription, getting it for just £2.50, then hit the link in the description. That's theathletic.co.uk/Howson. That's athletic.co.uk/Howson. It is the new home of football writing, and every single week it seems that they're growing with more analysis, more writers for each different club, and some really good stuff's happening there as well. I believe they've just got an Opta feed as well, if you listen to what Laurie was saying last week. So check that out. Link is in the description. Right, let's get into it. Howie, I would love to have brought you here to talk about much happier things, like namely United beating Liverpool. That would have like made my day, to be honest with you. But I have brought you on largely because of the racism that's been going on in football, and you've got a lot of your own experience with that. You are an ambassador for Kick It Out as well. Can you give us any idea of what the racism was like when you made your debut? First black player to play for Liverpool. That must have been a big thing in itself.
Well, I grew up at a time when there weren't many, many black players in football, especially at the top clubs. Again, I remember a good friend of mine, Remy Moses, was he just broke into the team at United. But it's really disappointing to hear some of the comments and the suggestions about players walking off. And there was a non-league team that walked off at the week, Haringey. And when I hear some of the comments and the excuses that players are given, and when you put it into context of some of the things that we had to endure, I wish that we could go on the pitch and we were just going to get monkey chances. But for giving an example again, you'd be playing at an away ground and you're going to take a corner, and you could see that they'd be reaching in the pockets, then they're coming out with darts, golf balls, lighters, coins, stones, bricks, whatever they could to throw at you. The abuse was a lot more extensive than monkey chance. It was about your colour. There was the nigger, the coon, the wog, the what's her name, and it was constant. And for me, again, as I say, because I'd grown up in a predominantly white area in Liverpool, is that I was kind of like accustomed to it, and I was ready for it, and I'd always fought against it. And my two older brothers said, again, you have to, again, the best way that you can answer it is by playing well and score a goal, and that's the course that I took. But it's really disappointing to see that players now were using, I think, the wrong approach to attack this, because racism is a problem for society and not necessarily football. Football does a lot in its quest to eradicate it from the stadiums and to keep people in a safe place. But it's a social problem that, again, it just irons itself out, and people can go to a match on a Saturday afternoon and keep their mouths shut for an hour and a half and then go back outside and carry on to be what they are. So I think that it's a point where we're at now, where they're putting a plaster over a wound that needs major surgery.
What do you think the correct course of action is with any sort of racist chanting? Would you tell the players to walk off?
No.
Do you wish that would have been
enough? No, and I don't, because at the end of the day, again, as I say, once this has happened, what it does is it opens up a whole can of worms, whereas the football clubs and the football authorities are not going to be able to put the lid back on it, because where does it stop? You've got a white player on the football pitch, and the people on the terraces want to start singing about his family, his wife, his kids, whatever. What does he do? Does he walk off? Does he feel abused? So it's taking it into a place now where there's possibly no return. And again, Haringey, again, they're going to go down in history as being the first club to do this. But I just think, again, it was the wrong approach, because, again, as I say, it doesn't just stop with football. Football is the sport where the fascists and the racists can promote themselves. But in most cases, you'll find that again, that they're thick, they're idiots, the clowns who maybe want to gain favour amongst their own group or their own gang because they'll shout something stupid or they'll be brave enough to shout something stupid. But
I saw Henry Winter. I actually spoke to him on Twitter and he said, there needs to be education. I disagree because what education could you teach someone to not be racist?
Well, again, when I'm an ambassador for Show Racism, a Red Card, I'm for Kick It Out. And when I first started work with Red Card, it was about 20 years ago, I said to our CEO, Jake Grabby, that if you're looking at 16, 17-year-olds with this, I said, you've got no chance. They're already in doubt. They're set in their ways. But what you can do is you create a culture at primary school level, going into schools. And overall, again, that's been working. That's the approach that they've been having. And it's growing a culture from grassroots football. But unfortunately, again, as I say, the funding isn't readily available where they can hit more targets each year. Kick It Out tend to focus their campaign on the professional football clubs and the higher level, whereas Red Card, again, their main work is getting coaches to go into local schools up and down the country. We had this high-profile incident last week in Bulgaria, and it seems to be the same process, whereas there isn't an education package which goes into schools and enlighten them to different cultures and that respect for different cultures. Because if it carries on this way, it can only end up in all out war on the streets of Britain. And it's gonna come to a time where people are gonna walk up to you and ask you, which side are you on?
I think the reaction to what happened in Bulgaria last week was very interesting because there was a lot of players and a lot of ex-players coming out and going, don't be pointing the finger too much at Bulgaria because we're not exactly the cleanest ourselves and there is an issue in England. I think it's probably, as you sort of said before, people might be able to keep their mouth shut for 90 minutes, but it still finds its way on social media. My personal opinion is I think a lot of what's on social media is kids doing it for a reaction rather than people actually really believing some of the things that they say. But there is still an element of it. I think you hear it maybe in the pub, you hear it, like, you certainly don't hear the mass chanting. Mm. I imagine that's what it was like in the 70s.
Well, I think that game, last week, the England game, I thought it was set up. It was like somebody put the kettle on 2 weeks earlier and it started getting to the boil to that game. You've got Tammy Abraham's coming out on Saturday talked about it and they may be going to they had the chance to walk off if they were facing racial abuse, but again you're not going to be walking off, you're 4-0 at half time and have a chance to lose the game. That shouldn't have been the option anyway. You're there to play football, although you're not there to be abused in any way, is that there are some things again that you have to tolerate within that sphere. It's a national sport and you're representing your national team. And I think again in a simplistic way of walking off that football pitch, it undid all the work that black players had achieved over the past 30, 40, 50 years, and the abuse was monkey chance. It could have been a lot worse than that. And I think that I thought, again, looking at that, there was somebody outside of that game consoling the racists in the ground, and that's why they walked out. And people were saying, but they made an announcement over the tannoy, and you know, with dealing with people like that they come there to make a statement, and their statement normally evolves into violence. There was a distinct lack of police presence inside the stadium, again, knowing the heightened tensions with that game. And the fact that they just got up and walked out, and there were still sections of the crowd who were still given the monkey chance, but again, I've gone on record in saying that I think that football would have lost on that day if England had walked off that pitch. and it sets a precedent. It'd be interesting to see if a team or a club walk off the pitch if the 4-0 up.
Yeah, it'd be easier to walk off 4-0 down, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and as I say, it's that's the sort of like the rhetoric around it, and it is and has become a massive talking point. But I think that there has to be a collective approach to this now. FIFA, UEFA, the FA, all the governing bodies in football need to sit down and source out a plan and a projection and how they're going to deal with this issue in the future. And I just think that if the people who are perpetrating this know that they can stop a game of football by just shouting monkey chants, and again, they're prepared to get arrested as well. I mean, it's not as if we're going to get arrested and I don't really want to be spending the night. This is a badge of honour for these people. So I think there has to be a sit down and an organised plan of how they're going to deal with it, and not just at the top end, at grassroots football as well, because again, this goes on at grassroots football with parents or with lads who just want to have a game of football on a Saturday afternoon, and they're coming up against a team who were shouting abuse or again even whispering abuse to them while on a football pitch.
There's a few points I want to mention there. One, I've been to a game in Sofia. Your point about there being a lack of police in there was huge, because they had RoboCop police, the full riot gear police in the stand that I was in. I was watching Sofia versus Ludogorets, and that had a hell of a lot of police both ringing the pitch because people were trying to get on the pitch, but also inside the stadium. I don't like if people are going to walk off, I kind of support that in a way, but I don't like the three strike policy. Like, you get to be racist twice, and then the third time's not enough. Yeah. It's either like you hear it and you go, or like you said, you maybe tolerate it. And as for even it being at grassroots, when I coached my son's team, they was under nines, under tens. We're at City Centre, Manchester. You know, I've got half black players, half white players, and they was getting abused. Some of my players was getting abused with it, and you just think. I don't get where this comes from. I certainly don't get it where it comes from an 8-year-old.
Well, obviously it comes from the home. Yeah. That's the mindset of children sitting down hearing the parents shouting crap at a TV game. And what was really interesting last week with that Bulgaria game is that they had a black player who nationalised himself. He come from South Africa, nationalised himself to play for Bulgaria. And I'd love to know how he felt about that. Because obviously, those monkey chants are aimed at him. Mm. And he's with them. He's playing for them. I thought that the manager was in on it. His comments after the game.
Yeah, when he said the captain went up to talk to him at halftime just to apologise for the performance. No, they didn't, mate.
Yeah. And he's saying, well, he didn't hear it. The referee, I didn't hear it. So again, you're asking yourself what is the propaganda going on here? You're going on that pitch, knowing that there are issues other than football, and those issues have been in the media for the last 2 weeks. You're telling me that you can't hear around. Never mind on the far side of the pitch, you can't hear around you the monkey chants. The referee is in a position where he can hear everything. The players were making him aware just in case he didn't hear this. And he comes out with a statement that he didn't hear it. So
even if they didn't hear it, there was Nazi salutes at one end of the pitch, which the TV highlighted.
Mm. And again, as I say, that took it into a different sphere. Because again, as I say, the Jewish community, I'm sure, would have took umbrage over seeing something like that. So it wasn't just about blacks, and that's why I think it was organised, and there was somebody outside of that stadium made contact with somebody in the stadium and said, "You've done enough. We've made our point," and they all just walked out as uniform, no trouble. And normally, again, when you're dealing with people like that, they want to make a statement, and that statement normally includes violence.
What do you think the major turning point on the terraces in England was? Was it the abolition of terracing?
Well, there were a couple of things again. Obviously, again with Hillsborough and the Bradford fire, and also again with Heysel, we had three disasters, and I think in the space of 3 years, and I think the fact that it was a criminal offence. I think that people seeing, I think in the beginning when they first made it a criminal offence, people were getting caught on CCTV, and although again they may not have got arrested on match day, the police would turn up on their houses on Monday morning and they were being arrested. And I think again football now has become a multicultural support. Again, both of our clubs, again, we draw our support from all over the world. That's why we're known as big clubs. And I think in inside of the stadium again, although again I believe there was an idiot at Old Trafford on Saturday who shouted something, which he's rightly being arrested for. But I think in general, be like Liverpool and Manchester United are the two biggest clubs in Europe, and it doesn't matter again where they are in the league. Again, as I say, it's the biggest game. The build up for that game, they're building up for that game 2 weeks ago on Saturday, because they know that the global audience is most probably one of the best in world football. So I think again, as I say, the banter again, which again oversteps the mark again from a fan's point of view. You get Liverpool fans singing about Munich, you get Manchester United fans singing about Heysel and Hillsborough. So again, as I say, is that a point where is when they play each other in the future that they take the teams off, and you know that that's not going to be the narrative. But we're using race now as a sort of like as a portal to try and control people who invariably can't be controlled.
It'd be the same if a gay player came out
exactly
in a big game like this.
Yeah.
You can imagine that he's probably going to get some shit off the terraces.
Yeah.
Probably get a lot of protection in the media and stuff, and rightly so. But then do they get to walk off if he's getting homophobic stuff? Because he's gonna.
Yeah, and as I say, fans on the terraces will target anything in an opposition club, whether it be a newspaper article.
Jamie Vardy got it this week after his missus.
Exactly. So again, I'm not having this. They're talking about my missus, my family. Hey, come on, lads, we're walking off. We're getting beat 2-0. If they can be doing it for the blacks and the Jews and the Irish and the whatever, this is our moment. Let's get off. And that's the that is the game changer. When do you do it? Or can you only walk off the pitch when your team is neither level or in the lead? If they're getting beat, I'm sorry, you can't walk off the pitch.
It'd be a mad rule to bring in, wouldn't it?
When you think of how they've handled this over the last 20 years, I remember John Barnes and was it Mark Chamberlain? Barnes and Chamberlain represented England in Brazil. Barnes, he just scored a worldy goal.
Was this at the Maracanã?
Yeah. And they got racially abused on the plane coming home by England fans. And again, you're thinking, they've just beaten Brazil. I think it was 3-1 for the first time in Brazil. And you want to jump on the plane now and start abusing them. But that's the ignorance and the mindset of people. No matter again what you do or what you achieve within the game of football, there's a mindless group of people who see you as a threat, the enemy, because you're a different colour. They see themselves as something which they feel is below them and below their culture.
Racism in terms of black players coming through, I'm not going to say it's been eradicated, but it's certainly nowhere near the level it must have been 30, 40 years ago. It seems like there's a hell of a lot of black players getting the chance. You would almost say it's fair and it's based on ability, you would think.
Well, I think it is based on ability again. When you the modern day game is based on pace, power, agility. Black players are born with that naturally. And that's why there's a prevalence with black players again breaking. If you think back to the Arsenal team, the Invincibles, they went through a season again unbeaten. If you look at our team now, Liverpool again, I think there was only Jordan Henderson and Andy Robinson on Sunday, who were white, who were in the starting 11. There's obviously James Milner on the bench and Inan Shaqiri. But apart from that, most squads now, when you look again, as I say, there's more of a proportion now of black players than what there was, say, 15, 20 years ago. And that's because of the ability. But also, again, because the game is so fast, if you play against somebody who's got pace and you haven't got pace, then you're going to struggle. And the clubs know this, and they knew they'll use this as a tactic. Most teams, or the good teams now, again, United did it on Sunday for the first game. They play on counter-attack. If you've not got pace, you can't play counter-attack. Mm. So the value of black players is becoming more and more evident. If you look at other sports, the American football, all the wide receivers and running backs, they're all black because of that pace, power, and agility. And at the top end of sports, again, you're going to see more and more of it.
I think people have an issue when people think that black players have only got that. Because if you look at somebody like Angel Gomez, I wouldn't say he's got pace, I wouldn't say he's got power. Mm. The guy's tiny, but he's got vision, he's got intelligence, he's got a touch that God himself couldn't give you.
Yeah.
And that's why he's a professional footballer.
Yeah, again, as I say, I'm talking about in the wider sense that if you look at the Premier League, the selling point for it is the pace that's in it. How teams can be from one end to your end within 3 or 4 seconds, and the ball can be in the back of the net. So strategically, again, as I say, clubs are starting to work and use more and more on pace. And if you play against a team that, and again, obviously you need a little bit of craft and a little bit of guide and a little bit of strength in there as well. But I think that the modern game now is lending itself to a certain type of formula that other maybe lower teams, they have to buy into it now, because all the top teams have it. And especially again when you see in Europe last season, we had three teams in the semi-final of the Champions League.
Mm.
Because the Premier League is so fast.
There's an excellent chapter in Soccernomics which talks about racism, both in terms of players and in terms of coaches. And it's still prevalent in terms of coaches because people can't quantify how good a coach is as easily as you can with a player. But because football is a pretty much meritocracy in terms of the starting 11, black players are getting in on merit. Do you think there still is a lot of work to be done in terms of getting managers in?
Well, again, that's a great question, because again, this has been a kind of like an argument that has trailed us for when we've retired from football, of coaching opportunities, of managerial opportunities, and it's tended to be the case that we've imported a lot more managers. And I'm thinking again for white managers as well, is that the general conception is that European coaches and managers are a lot more tactile or a lot more tactically, you know, than the footballs that we've had. We've come through the system and through the game here, and that's not true, because again, as I say, you see a lot of the guys that I play with, again, tactically they're astute. A good friend of mine, Noel Blake, he played with me at Birmingham. He managed at Exeter, and then he started working with England, and a lot of the players, again, you see in our England team now, he brought them through and he coached them. But rather than move them up the ladder with inside the institution of England, they were bringing other players in, like A.D. Boothroyd, Stuart Pearce, and replacing them with the under-21s or the under-23s.
And
Southgate. So you would have thought again, as I say, that within your own ranks again. You're preaching about inequalities that are going on in other countries. Well, as you were saying before, you have to look at yourself. And I think they're using Chris Powell now as a black coach with Gareth Southgate. But I think right throughout the coaching system, and what black players will tell you, or black coaches will tell you, is that they don't want to be given a job on the basis of being a token gesture. They want to be given a job on their ability, their tactical ability. Last season we had, what's his name at West Brom?
I know what you mean. Lads, West Brom guy. He got binned, didn't he? It was just outside the playoffs.
Yeah, well, Darren Moore. Yeah, Darren brilliant. Moore, yeah. Yeah, I think he'd only lost four games, but they didn't want to give him the job in the first place, but they had to give him the job because he'd just done so well in nearly avoiding relegation, and he'd wish that they'd give it to him maybe a month earlier, but they didn't want him to be the face of their club. And the first opportunity they got rid of him.
You've seen Gerrard walk in, first managerial job, big club like Rangers. Lampard, first managerial job, Derby, straight in at Chelsea. Wayne Rooney coming in at Derby.
Sol Campbell had to go to Macclesfield.
Yeah, Paul Ince was down at Macclesfield as well, and Milton Keynes, I think, as well.
Yeah, Milton Keynes, yeah, Blackpool and Blackburn.
Paddy Evra told me that. Fergie told him one day he'll be the Manchester United manager. But he's not going to start at United, is he?
No.
No, like, you know, other players might get an opportunity of coming straight in, like Rooney going straight in at Derby.
Yeah.
But he's not even finished playing yet.
Yeah.
You know, and already talking up like he'll manage in the Premier League one day. He probably will.
Well, he'll get that opportunity because of his status. But I always remember somebody telling me years ago, I think it was my manager at Blackburn, Don Mackay, he always said that top footballers don't necessarily make top coaches. Sometimes, again, it's not about the knowledge, again, it's about it's a package, it's a personality. How do you get the best out of the players? When is the right time to jump on something? When's the right time to step back? He said, you need, in some cases, you need a wealth of experience of learning off somebody else. But I'm sure, again, as I say, that Wayne won't be, when he gets his coaching qualifications and he's completed that experience, I don't think you're going to be seeing him in the conference or in League 3 or 4.
You're just not, are you? You know, and was he a better player than Paddy Everett's peak? Maybe, but like not definitely.
Yeah.
You know, and Paddy might have to, you know, if he's living in London at the moment, he might have to take a Charlton or lower down. I don't know. I don't know where he's going to start.
Well, I think I was watching him on last night only because he was on
Monday Night Football,
and I don't normally listen to the what's her name afterwards. I sat down and listened to him and Jamie Carragher, and that game at Anfield. And I remember on the Monday, the radio station rang me up, and I'd been on trial in Spain, and I remember they using the word negra to me. And I've gone for the boy because I was taught he was calling me a nigger. And they've gone, no, calm down. And saying negra means black. And I've gone, well, right, I understand it. But when I heard that Luis Suarez was negra, kept on repeating it, then it took on a whole different...
Especially after Evra said to him, say that to me again, I'm going to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
So, you'd stop, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but again, as I say, I'd done a radio interview and spoke up for Luis Suarez, saying that I'd been in Spain, he said the word negra, but I didn't know that he repeated it. And then the next video I said, well, to be honest with you, he's bang out of order, and I can understand what Patrice Evra would feel like, and I know how angry he would feel. And then Jamie Carragher, he admitted it last night, I didn't believe that. When they played, after he got the ban.
The T-shirt thing
at Wigan. And I thought that was poor judgment by the club to do that. And it really sickened me. And I know a lot of fans around the world are going to, when you went, listen, I don't think I'm going to be checking for Liverpool no more after that. And as I say, I've gone on record of saying that it was a bad decision by the club. And for anybody, again, who who would let that happen, because there would have been a lot of fans, Liverpool fans, who would have been offended by that. And I just think that they got it. And to be fair, again, Jamie Carragher came up last night and he was explaining. He said that he said he didn't think that it was Daglish or the coaching staff. He think it was one of the players who brought these T-shirts in to sort of like say we're thinking of you, and we're, and at the end of the day, again, he shit on us and went to Barcelona. You know what I mean? So, but I thought that was poor judgment, because somebody from inside the club should have checked that and went, no, he's just been given a 6-game ban, and we've got to hold our tongue and hold our what's the name, our water, because the club didn't accept the ban. They were still saying they were thinking about challenging it, and they didn't have no cause to challenge it. And again, obviously, the next game, Patrice has gone to shake hands with him and he's held his hand back, Suarez. And I just, again, I liked him as a player, but I just thought that he was a twat after doing that.
I thought he was snide without the racism, the biting.
Well, all of that again, and he kept on doing it. No matter the other things, I think you got mental health problems when you keep on doing that. And especially biting somebody.
Three times he's bit someone as well.
He bit somebody in the World Cup.
I don't think my dog would be able to bite someone three times.
Pardon?
I don't think my dog would be able to bite someone three times. Well, I'd be in trouble.
I think they're calling him Rover now, aren't they? But yeah, it was a bad experience in the time of the club, and as I say, the.
I wouldn't mind a penny for Glenn Johnson's thoughts having to put that T-shirt on.
Yeah, and but again, at the end of the day, that should have been his decision, and he should have looked at it for what it is and said, well, no, I'm sorry, I can't put that on, because at the end of the day, he's being found guilty. I've seen the evidence. I don't see any evidence to speak up for his point of view and for what he said. And if he did, or if he does feel that it's unjust, then fight it. And if he gets a 12-game ban, fight it, but don't just give in.
I don't want this to be, United are really good at this and Liverpool are fucking horrendous with this, because the fact that Ron Atkinson's still employed by MUTV is fucking wrong as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know how United can have a go at anybody while that's still the case.
Yeah.
Which just proves that, whether it was 1977 or whether it's, right now, there's still a fucking issue in the game. I said to you when you walked through the door, go, Karen.
Because People say to me, I constantly get asked, how come you don't work at Liverpool? How come you don't work on LFC TV? How come you don't do the lounges and whatever? And because of that Luis Suarez incident, I worked in a lounge a few weeks after it. And one of the fans asked me, if you have a Q&A, asked me the question, what do you think? And I said, to be honest with you, I thought that he was absolutely bang out of order. And the club didn't like that. They thought that I should have dodged the question or toned it down. And I said, no, he's bang out of order. And I said, they told the same story. I supported them in the beginning when I first heard it. But when I heard again the full story of that he kept on repeating it and repeating it, then that comes a case of he's using a term, which is a racist term, against a black player, although again it's a Manchester United player. It doesn't matter to me, and I'm a staunch Liverpool fan, but I'm black before I'm a Liverpool fan, and I have children and friends and who I'm responsible for, and people see me as a role model who constantly speaks out for them and constantly has the thoughts of them and their feelings in my heart. And when I heard that, it gutted me, and it gutted a lot of people. So, obviously, didn't get no more work after that.
On to current matters, on the field matters. Slightly happier ones. As I said to when you walked through the door, I am so glad we didn't get dick this weekend, because this would not have been fun.
Do you know what? you were never going to get Dick. Those two clubs, it doesn't matter where they are, you know, one at the top, one at the bottom. I said to you before, that is the biggest game in Wales football when Liverpool play Manchester United. It's not Barcelona, Real Madrid or Inter Milan or AC Milan. It's when Liverpool play United, it's a global audience and the players, whatever, will turn up. And that game is always going to be a draw. It was always going to be a draw. There's too much at stake for either of the fans in losing that game, and it's just a pity really that people have talked more about the VAR issues than the actual game. But the games are so intense. That intense that an hour and a half seems like 50 minutes because it just goes that quickly. And it's a feverish pace. The atmosphere inside there, whether it be at Anfield or Old Trafford, is superb on those days. And I just think it was always going to be a deadlock. I thought it'd actually be 0-0.
I went for my tip for the week. I had United plus one, so it's like a double chance almost for United because I could see us losing. Although I didn't think it'd be properly heavy. I could see us losing, but I could also see a draw. And I've said a couple of times, if we was going to win it, we was going to nick it. We was going to do what we almost did with 5 minutes from doing. We was never going to turn up, play beautiful football, create 55 chances and win 3-0. That was not on the cards, I don't think. But yeah, I think I was gutted the way it ended because I thought we could have done it. But maybe you're right. Maybe there was something in Liverpool's streak was always going to come to an end this week.
Yeah,
it happened with Arsenal when they was going for their 50, didn't they?
Yeah. As I say, it's a game like no other. When those two clubs again come head to head, it has a lot of passion. I think that the conditions again suit both teams. Would it be raining and the pitch would have been greasy. Again, it's just a really disappointing that the VAR was the talking point rather than the game. Although I would say that the game itself lacked a lot of quality, especially within the penalty areas. I think that we only had possibly one, two shots on target. But it became a tactical game, I think, because of where United are again. Because normally, again, United at home, they wouldn't play like that. They'd be gung-ho and we're going to score more goals than you. That's always been your philosophy. That's why you've won so many league titles. But I just don't think that they're at that stage or that level now. I'm in mind with Roy Keane. I think that the club needs to be restructured. The recruiting agency of some of the players that you bring. As I look up again, I've grown up with Manchester United, so I can see a player and go, easy Man United player. You can see players in there and you're thinking, what are they doing playing for Manchester United? I think they have the same view about Liverpool. I think we've got players in our team who are very, very lucky to be in that starting level. But right now, again, as I say, we're top of the league and we're being chased. As I say, we've got a worthy opponent in Manchester City. If anyone is going to catch us, it'll be them. I don't think any of the other ones will.
Think you're going to do it this year?
I think that this is the best opportunity that we've got. What we are doing now is we're game managing a lot better. Maybe last year or years gone by, we'd have maybe panicked in that game on Saturday and ended up losing another one. And another one, and but we didn't. Again, we kept it tight at the back, and we just kept on building. And I think that the substitutions made a difference for us. Mm. We got a little bit of craft into the middle of the park, whereas the three before in Wijnaldum, Fabinho, and in particular Henderson, they're just workhorses, whereas. Lallana, Kayser and Oxlade-Chamberlain, they've got ability to beat people and run with the ball. We didn't have that. When you see, once they came on, United started dropping deeper. So and they're used to this now, where teams just drop deeper and the patience has just picked them off.
I think I think you're absolutely bang on. I think both managers did a brilliant tactical job. I thought we nullified Liverpool's threats really well. Those three substitutions for Liverpool probably made the difference. Workhorse in the first hour or so tire United out, and we just didn't have the ability or quality on the bench. If we'd have just had a Lingard to carry on the work rate of James and Rashford or somebody else in that kind of mould, because you bring Martial on, Martial's quite a luxury player.
He's an enigma, isn't he? Again, you don't know, you never know what you get. Like, I don't think he's a Man United player. Because again, when you play for Liverpool or Manchester United, you've got to be a big player every week. You can't just turn up when you want or score a hat-trick against Bournemouth. You know what I mean? Again, you've got to be there every week. You've got to be contributing every week. He should be around the man of the match every week. But I always find with him, and again, he made his league debut against Liverpool and scored.
Passed out when he scored that goal.
And scored. And you think, and again, well, as a Man United fan, you'd be thinking, wow, what have we just got here? Hey, doesn't it get any better than this? Made his debut, scored against Liverpool. And you're rubbing your hands and you're waiting for what's going to come next. And it never ever came, did it?
No, I think he had to come on. He probably needs minutes for the rest of the season. And Rashford was dead on his feet. James was dead on his feet. Pereira dead on his feet. And I think you're right, a little bit more quality. Liverpool started to turn the screw, knowing we was tired. Put three subs you could put on. We couldn't put subs on like that.
Yeah.
You know, we're looking at, all right, we bring Martial on, who's not going to do the same job Rashford did, even fresh. And then you bring on Brandon Williams.
Yeah.
Who has got that heart, and I wouldn't have even minded if we put him up front because he'd have pressed and he might have just held that extra 5 or 10 yard, but we did collapse. I mean, the average position of the first half versus the second half is drastic. We collapsed and we shrunk back in, and we've seen teams do that for the last 25 years against United, and you just keep knocking on that door and you was going to get there, and you didn't have many chances, but you did set the one that you have, which
that's James. I think he's going to be a good player.
I think he started. Do you know what impressed me the most is that he's adapted to joining United on the loss of his father, and he's not skipped a beat. It looks like he's just took it in his stride, and I think that's quite special. Mm. I think there's a lot of areas in his game he could probably improve.
Well, he will do again. He's what is he? 21. So again, he is, and he's coming from a relatively small club, so one of the biggest clubs in the world, and he's done all right so far. Next season will be the telling time for him again. Once he's had a season underneath his belt, he gets a pre-season with the United, and obviously you're going to recruit and clear.
We hope we do.
No, well, you are. I think that's going to be a given. I don't think again that they're going to make any changes in January with the transfer. But I think that what they'll do is they'll settle for what they got. And If you were a United fan, would you settle for the FA Cup, a trophy?
I don't know if you can say. I think you can only look back on a season. What's happened in the season? Is everyone fit till the end of the season? No, I expect more. If it's
but what you find with football is, especially when you've got a lot of young players in your squad, is that you have to introduce that winning mentality. And that winning mentality comes from a trophy. Like I said, if you think back to when City's reign first started off, it started off with the FA Cup. They went round the city on an open-top bus. And as a player, that adulation and that stature of looking down is that you can't wait to get back to pre-season training. It happened with us again last season, and I've been saying it for years now. We should have been concentrating more on the FA Cup or the Carling Cup, because once those players get the opportunity to go around the city on an open top bus, that's when they get the club. And we were able to achieve that last season with the Champions League. And you can see now again how it's carried over. We were 9 games in and we're unbeaten. And I think that's what United have to get to. We think back to again when Alex Ferguson, he was getting sacked. He was on the brink of getting sacked. They won the FA Cup that season.
Commoners Cup, League Cup, then the league.
Everything changed. So I think from a United point of view is that if they get a trophy on the table, especially with those young players and all that, is that you create a winning mentality within your club. That win mentality then spreads then again, because they're never going to have a problem attracting players to Manchester United.
No, I don't think that. A lot of people are like, who wants to come and play for United? I'm like, a lot of people.
Of course they will. Yeah, then I think again, the likes of Liverpool and United, they're not too worried about being in the Champions League, because they know that the projections are, or the club's ambition is that's where they're going to end up.
What's that experience like? Because you've done it with the European Cup. Of all the trophies to do it with around Liverpool, there's an iconic picture of you sitting at the front of the bus,
Yeah, and as I say, that's again what the impact that I made that season, or towards the end of the season again, in relation to the semi-final against Bayern Munich, and to do that is one of the best things again as a footballer you can do. You can win a game, you can run around Wembley, you can run around the stadium, yeah, you'd have a great night afterwards. But that experience, it's like a 2 hour orgasm. That's the best way that you can, because you're on such a high, an adrenaline rush. Everybody that you see in the crowd when you're looking down, you know them. There's some of them are on window ledges and they're hanging out their houses and they're on precarious places, all to get a look at you. And again, we didn't have social media then in 81.
Probably a good thing.
No, but again, you see them now; they're all video, and they're saving those memories and those images for the future. But yeah, it is. It's an unbelievable experience to be able to go around your city on an open source bus. And again, that was the double advantage to me, is because it was my home city. It wasn't sort of like a club that I played for as in Birmingham or Sunderland. And for the first and only time, again, they come right through my community in Toxteth. Never, ever done that before.
Really? Did they do that because of you?
Yeah, well, I think they must have, because they've never done it since. But, it was special.
You can insert your own jokes about the bus getting robbed. I'll leave you to do that in the comments. Do you think that's one of the issues with Pochettino? Is that his attitude towards winning trophies, I don't think, meshes with a very top club. He's like, I don't think winning the FA Cup will do anything for this team. I don't think winning a League Cup does anything for this team.
Maybe he doesn't see it, because, again, I don't know what his success rate was as a player. But for Spurs haven't got a winning mentality in their club. They've got an early mentality. We'll get to the Cup final, we'll get beat. We get to the Champions League, we get beat. We finish second in the league or third in the league, we get beat. So they haven't got a winning mentality in their club, and the only way that they're going to do it is again. And if you have a five-year plan, this is where we need to be. But with most clubs, their emphasis is placed far too much on Champions League football. We've got to get in the top four. And for me, and again, I suppose you as a fan, if it was a toss-up between getting in the Champions League or going to Wembley and winning Wembley, I'm taking Wembley. As a fan, it's a day out. And again, that's in the culture of Manchester United and Liverpool. And when they get to that stage again, Tottenham are never ever going to win that game in Madrid, because, again, Liverpool, right throughout its history, and the club is right throughout it, is that we've been there before, the fans have been there before. And if you've seen, when you watch the game, Tottenham looked inexperienced at that level. And, once you get to that having that winning mentality, that winning experience, going around London, that's where you think that Arsenal are a little bit ahead of them, because again, I think Arsenal won the FA Cup was it three years ago, and it was Jack Wilshere was got.
They won them back to back, didn't they? Yeah, they won a couple back to back not long ago.
So they've got like a winning mentality, but they just didn't take it to the next level.
Do you think there's something in that which is holding City back in the Champions League? The fans don't. Did City fans maybe see Europe as a United thing? You know, because obviously you lot, as much as this is going to hurt to say, do have a very rich history with European football. Is, you know, that potentially carried you guys over to get the 6-1 in the summer. Do you think that's something that could be holding City back, is that they don't really have any connection at all with European football? Maybe they see it as a United thing.
Well, and mentally, that's a really good point. Because of the game, their arch rivals in Manchester have got a rich history within European football, with not just the Champions League, with the UEFA Cup and the old FAIRS Cup. And in there's a status about football. When you go into a competition, people would look at Liverpool and Manchester United and go, big clubs in this. Hey, they've won in Europe. They play Manchester City and they'll think, here's a club that's come up with a lot of money. They put the team together with a lot of money. Don't have a huge fan base. And I think that detracts from them as well, because Manchester United control Manchester. City would take, 30, 40 years to get to the status of where United are. We have the same thing in Liverpool with Everton. So that inexperience of winning a European, and what you're seeing with history is that City have come up short. It's not as if they've gone out on a bad decision. Well, the last year again against Spurs in the semi-final, and they did. But they've constantly come up short. They can play brilliant football in the group stages, smash it. But once it comes to knockout football, two legs, they're inexperienced in it. And I think that the fact that again that the neighbours are Manchester United, who've got a history of doing well, and it must play on them as a club.
Right, Howie, on that note, I'm going to say thank you very much, mate.
Brilliant. Nice one.
Brilliant
to
have you on. Remember, The Athletic is sponsoring all of these warm downs, and you can find out more about that in the link in the description, but it's theathletic.co.uk/Housen. That is athletic.co.uk/Housen. New home of football writing, an absolute they've basically done what City have done, I think. They've just come in and just gone, there's the best ones, we're having them. So go check them out if you're interested in some high-end football writing, not the usual sort of tabloidy stuff. There's no adverts on there or nothing. It's absolutely top. So go check them out. And once again, Howie, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on. Enjoy that.
Subscribe, and I'll see you guys in the next one. Laters.